What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to another episode of It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action? Serving the youth in high-risk neighborhoods. Consider the merits of a strong town, and you may think of the usual list of finance-related items. But converse with residents on the ground, and you'll learn that strong towns means much more than checking balance sheets. It means fostering neighborhoods that allow residents to have a chance to build a bright future. However, in historically disinvested neighborhoods in Chicago, such as East Garfield Park and Humboldt Park, and across North America, violence, especially among youth, disrupts residents' chances at success. Many youth remain truant from school to avoid encountering gangs, or join gangs out of necessity for protection. And understandably so, considering over 50% of Chicago murders in 2010 were gang-related, with 49% of its victims under 25. These Chicago neighborhoods have dealt with these rates of crime for decades, which is why in 1969, Chicago resident Bob Jamilo created BUILD, one of Chicago's leading gang intervention, violence prevention, and youth development programs. BUILD's model focuses on working with youth on the neighborhood level to learn where they struggle and plug them into programs to help transform their lives. And the outcomes, as you'll learn in this episode, will inspire any city leader to reconsider how they approach neighborhoods experiencing crime. This week, I had the pleasure to chat with two of the staff members at BUILD, Rick Miranda, the manager of Arts Academy programs at BUILD, and Benji Wax, BUILD's digital media coordinator. From gang detachment to a decline in violent behavior, Rick and Benji have witnessed the life transformation that happens when organizations get to know the residents they serve on a neighborhood level, a lesson everyone can learn, including public officials. In this episode, Rick and Benji share how you can serve the youth in high-risk neighborhoods in your own community, including why mutual respect must precede interventions, why city leaders must understand their constituents' daily life on a neighborhood level, and what steps you can take today to serve the youth in your community. Enjoy. Benji and Rick, what's going on, fellas? How are you today?
Doing very well, Jacob. How are you, sir?
Doing good. So happy to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting us.
Yes, sir. How's life in Chicago?
Things are good, man. Things are good. Of course, there's always, you know, things going on, but we really try our best to alleviate a lot of those issues. And I mean, there's a strike going on right now, a teacher strike, but we do our best to take care of our kids and our communities. And so we've opened our doors to tons of kids who don't have stuff to do during the day, make sure they've got, you know, good programming going on and just, you know, seeing all the fun that they're having despite the situation and, you know, just being able to put some smiles on some faces is what it's all about.
Yeah, I feel you. And I was chatting with Benji a little bit yesterday. He said, Jacob, just a heads up, we got this union strike going on. You may be hearing some kiddos in the background. Yeah. So just a heads up. But we welcome it. It definitely captures, you know, the spirit of BUILD Chicago.
Definitely.
As we'll discuss more today. Well, fellas, super excited to chat. We have a great topic to discuss today, and that is serving the youth in high-risk neighborhoods. And fellas, I know y'all have been at this game for a bit. I was checking out the BUILD Chicago website. This organization has been around since 1969, doing a lot of great work, whether it's, you know, helping the youth see themselves as college bound. I know you guys have some gang prevention programs. You guys help increase access to healthcare. I know I'm just listing a few things of a really full suite that BUILD Chicago works on to help at-risk youth. To get us started, I'd love to hear from you two, the time that you all have been on staff. What have y'all observed in some of these high-risk neighborhoods across Chicago that reminds you why it was so central for, you know, your founder, Bob Jamilo, 50 years ago to start this organization?
This is my 12th year I've been at BUILD. What I've observed just through being in the line of work that I do is I grew up in one of these neighborhoods. I came from one of these neighborhoods, Humboldt Park. And so being a product of my own environment and knowing the havoc I was causing allowed me to see this future for these young people that I work with, removing them from the gangs, being able to find them opportunities or create those opportunities for them. But what you do see is a lot of the under-resourced levels that come with it, food deserts, you know, schools closing, the violence, the drugs, the gangs, it's all there.
Yeah, it's a really humbling reminder that, you know, maybe folk who have never lived in or take the time to observe high-risk neighborhoods, they may think that, you know, this is just by choice that folk are getting involved in gangs by choice, maybe not performing well at school by choice. But really, from what I've read on Build and other things online, it's really by design, whether that's lack of public investment, lack of access to food. Give me a few examples of, you know, how Build intervenes in these neighborhoods. Because it sounds like from what I've read, it's not just, you know, okay, we need to, you know, build another police station or heightened surveillance. You guys are actually on the ground getting to know these folk. Give me a few examples of the work y'all do.
Yeah, so it's a very multifaceted model. And for those interested, there's definitely a lot of literature regarding it on our website. It's actually being replicated in, you know, some other cities around the country, which is really cool to see to great effect. The bedrock of the organization is the intervention team. And so that was what was there back in 1969 before we had prevention, before we had education, before we had any of these other programming or departments. That was, it was like the on the street, getting to build relationships with these guys that are affiliated or at risk for being affiliated with street gangs. And to just giving them, you know, a chance to be like, you know, we've got opportunities for you, whether that's jobs, whether that's just a place to, you know, have some mentorship, a place to, you know, just talk to someone, a place to have. A lot of the times it's kids are going through stuff at home. And so sometimes they're scared to go at home with whatever issues are going on there. There's, you know, obviously things going on the streets. A lot of times there's stuff going on in school. And so it's just, you want to have a place where you feel safe and you feel valued and you are made to feel important, that you have the opportunity to succeed. A lot of times just an ear to be there, you know, just an older figure that's like, I believe in you, is so valuable and so simple. And so that's kind of how it began. Do you have more to say about intervention?
I mean, you know, it's the real deal. Having the guys that we do have that have been through that life allows these shorties to look at themselves, right? Like, they see them, that they've made it, and they see the positions that they're in. And, you know, these guys still have that respect, you know, and I think that's where it all comes down to, you know, and it's trying to earn that respect in these neighborhoods.
What's really unique about Build, I'd say, is one of the first, if not the first, to do active gang intervention in Chicago. But the street intervention team is built up of a lot of individuals who have been through the criminal justice system. A lot of them have some very, very incredible, heartbreaking, tragic, but beautiful, inspiring backstories. And they come from, you know, situations where they've been in it. They were locked up for decades, some of these guys, but they learn through that process, they err their ways, and they come out on the other side wanting to help these young kids not make the same mistakes that they did. And they come at it with like a passion and like a fire that you really don't see. And they're able to communicate in such a way with these young guys, because it's like, I know you, man. I was you. I am you, you know? And I'm not just some random guy just spitting words at you. It's like, I truly have walked in your footsteps. And so that connects, is able to connect with them in a way where a lot of times other people might not be able to reach some of these kids, because a lot of these kids are very hard to reach. They're actively involved with some really dangerous shit. And so that component of it, I think, is very crucial and the foundation of what makes Build work. And then also these guys have, you know, longstanding relationships from their early days, and they're able to leverage these relationships to broker truces. You know, when gang wars and stuff are going on, these guys step in and are able to like alleviate some of the, you know, the issues that are going on between groups. You know, sometimes they're able to make sure that guys get out safer. You know, there's violations in and out of these things, and they can be close to deadly. And so they're able to make sure these guys are able to get out of these without being killed or someone in their family being hurt or something like that. Yeah. So they're true. Like, you know, people toss around the word superhero a lot these days, especially now with Marvel being what it is.
Yeah.
But like, man, if I had to really put that moniker on a group of people, these dudes, like they're walking out in the middle, like bullets are flying, and they don't run away. They run towards it. And it's like, that is something that is truly just truly extraordinary. And you don't see that every day. And so that's what we need more of. And it's tough because a lot of these guys have criminal backgrounds, so they're not allowed into CPS schools due to a lot of the issues that have been happening with the shootings and stuff like that. And I get the policy, but it's difficult. We just have to make sure that we're able to, you know, work with the what we have, and, you know, take people who might not be the first and foremost that you would think about. Like, how do we deal with, you know, vulnerable at-risk, you know, affiliated youth? It's like, dudes that have been there, we got to make sure that we can give them the tools that they need, because they're the best ones to help deal with.
Yeah, I feel you, Benji.
So that's that. We started off with that because that is the bedrock of the agency. And since then, it has grown like crazy significantly, especially within the past like 6 years. Our current CEO is a very, very talented individual. And we've like doubled the revenue, tripled almost the staff size since like 2014 or 15. So that's very encouraging, inspiring to see how that's been going. But yeah, from there, you know, we added prevention, because it's like, you know, what you got to do is you got to stop kids before, you know, make sure that you educate them and put them into the fold and make them feel a part of something and listen to and important and all that stuff. So they don't feel the need to seek out the gang structure or life in the first place. And so we have had incredible success with the prevention program, which is with younger kids. The recent stat is like how 99% of the kids in that program avoided any gang involvement, which is phenomenal. And then from there, it's like, what about once we get them out? What about after? You know, there's such a difficult problem with the high school, the prison pipeline. And so it's like, we got to make sure these kids are given the opportunity to make something of themselves, to go get, you know, really educated, to get higher, you know, go to get some higher education, some college, what trade school, you know, whatever that looks like, but just something so you can, like, you don't have to rely or repeat the same cycles of, you know, poverty or recidivism that plagues so many of these communities. That program has expanded as well. And the ladies that work with Building Futures are incredible. They're, you know, all like the FAFSAs and all that crazy, like horrific forms. Like they're just there for you. You know, you need money, you need scholarships. Like, we got you. Just like come through and like just express desire. Even if you're not sure, let's talk about it. They take these kids on college tours. All these kids are like, man, I never thought I would ever see myself in college. I'm going to college. And it's completely changed their lives. And not only changed their lives, but the trajectory of their posterity's lives. Because it's like, you look up to who you were born through. And if everyone's moving away, you got to, you know, have someone to look up to. It's like, oh, my daddy went to college. You're so much more inclined to go to college. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it thus, you know, changes these cycles that have been ingrained in our society. And I think that's a, you know, crucial, essential element. I'll toss out more. We got our clinical and community wellness department, which is newer but has grown exponentially. We started off with one therapist last year, I think, and now we're at 10, which is unbelievable. And so they just do a lot of counseling, family services, restorative justice practices, art therapy. And it's just, it's very amazing to see how, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's a preconceived notion or whatever, but that young men have gotten involved with that as well and have really been consistent in coming to these appointments. And that's something, that sort of expression of emotion and in that sort of format is not something traditionally viewed as acceptable in, I would say, in society at large. We're getting there, but especially in some of the communities that we work with. Yep. And so to decrease that stigma has been a very, very beautiful thing to witness, and see how it's affected these young men as well has been great. So that's the initial big ones. We got some more we can probably touch on later, but.
That's fantastic, Benji. And truly, I mean, all the success that's come Build's way is so well-deserved. And just that story that you shared, it totally speaks to the value of this like peer-to-peer support. You know, I imagine like if I'm living in one of these high-risk neighborhoods, you know, I'm having some struggles. Maybe that's seeing my boy getting involved in some gangs or my son not performing well in school. You know, I'm going to connect so much better with a peer in my neighborhood who is perhaps experiencing the same thing or has in the past, as opposed to, you know, just like someone from the city popping in once a month. Have you seen that peer-to-peer support has been much more effective for Build? And I'm curious, what does the contrast look like? Because Build's doing something very special. I know you said a few other cities have replicated this model as well. What's the contrary? How are folk in other areas really approaching intervening in these high-risk neighborhoods?
I think it's a massive problem. You know, I think a lot of times you make sweeping policy decisions and throw money at institutions that do very little to actually impact the lives of these kids. And it really has to be a bottom-up sort of thing like that, because other than that, you just get lost in the mix. You know, you kind of become a number. You know, a staggering example is just the criminal justice system for youth. How that works is like they spend something. What was the stat here? It's like $187,765 a year per individual young person in the juvenile justice system. And how much does it cost for per individual for intensive mentoring at Build? $2,000. So talk about like how you invest in your community and the savings from your community. You know, it's like, God, it's pennies on the dollar. And you're saving taxpayers money and you're giving kids a real chance and real rehabilitation, not this, you know, abstract garbage that is fed to us by, you know, Goliath institutions that are archaic and don't work. And plus, you know, brand you with scarlet letters for the rest of your life that make it harder to ever succeed.
How has the city of Chicago responded? Because I was just looking at some of these statistics. I mean, 88% of youth reduced negative high-risk behaviors, 33% youth detached from gangs, 84% of youth who have been court involved have avoided recidivating. I mean, these are like considerable outcomes. It's evidence-based that you're spending. You know, we don't need to throw millions at institutions. We just need to, you know, support the folk in the neighborhood who know the neighborhoods best. How have city leaders responded seeing these really fantastic outcomes from your work?
Honestly, we have pretty good relationships, and Build is becoming more visible by the month, by the year. the last mayor, Rahm Emanuel, but he came through a couple times. The current mayor, Lori Lightfoot, I believe announced her candidacy here.
She did.
So that's a big deal. She rolls through. Like, we got a farm out back now. She came through. It's like, oh, I just want to check to see on the crops, you know? We got a lot of relationships with local aldermen, some state senators. And so because it's been around for so long and it's pretty unique in the work that it does and the efficacy is very notable, we've built some good rapport with policymakers. You know, it's paid off in different ways. You know, we've gotten some really impressive grants. We got $1 million from the MacArthur Foundation. We got $1 million from the Obama Foundation to run a program called My Brother's Keeper to kind of teach mentorship to young people, to then be mentors to other young people, sort of. So it's kind of like a perpetual sort of cycle of positive leadership. And yeah, I mean, as far as like, you know, funding, I think it's like half private, and then there's like a mixture of other things like that. We're always looking for that money, that cheddar. Yeah. And we're just hoping to see more growth in that area because we have some very ambitious, but I believe highly doable plans in the near future that will transform the neighborhood. Honestly, we've got some really incredible stuff going on. Yeah. Expanding for sure. Cause it's, you know, the building we came here in 2015 and at this 10,000 square foot building, we're like, whoa, this is huge. Cause we came from Wicker Park area, which is now very gentrified.
Yes.
And then this building just filled up like that. And so it's like, oh boy, we're going to need some more space. Cool. So they got some beautiful, beautiful plans in the works.
Y'all are making moves. Rick, I want to learn a little bit more from you and your work within the arts department. You know, I'd imagine a lot of folk that maybe want to do some public investment in these high-risk neighborhoods, you know, maybe their first thought is, you know, I have to do the silver bullet mega project. This is the transformation that a neighborhood needs. From the work I've read that you're doing, that's not the case. A lot of times we can incorporate some beautification projects, some public art, just some low-lift public investment to uplift these neighborhoods. What have you observed from your time working in the arts in these neighborhoods?
So this arts program, it came about, I was doing intervention at one of the high schools, and I had to create an after-school program to keep these kids after school. So it became a challenge to compete against that street corner. For the 2 hours that they can stay after school, I didn't have any incentive for them. They could have gone to the corner and made $200 in the 2 hours that they were there. I have a background in graffiti, and I started bringing in markers and canvas and indoor spray paint, and most of the kids were being referred to me because of the gang tagging and that they got caught in the bathroom or whatever. And so I started having them put all of that graffiti or that gang art into canvas and paint, and you know, from there just transformed. It became the hook here at Build, where it was, let's hook them with the art, let's, you know, tease them and get them in here, and you know, they're going to want to come in here and do graffiti, or they want to come in here and do a sculpture. We see all of that happening. Inside of the schools that I was in, there was probably three rival gangs, and it was a constant battle on a daily. And so they gave me a wall at one of the schools, and believe it or not, I had all three of the rival gangs sitting there painting one mural. Mm. So, you know, that was a big deal because it was, they had tried everything, kicking them out of school, arresting them, you know, and we came with the restorative justice practices into the school, and not punishing what happened, but more of creating that healing property, right? Like, you know, you guys are all here at the same school. You guys are going to be here for 4 years. Focus more on your education. Like, the street's going to be the street, but you got to learn and leave it out on the street. Just coming into these institutionalized places, there was an evening reporting center, and they wanted us to come in there and paint one room. But when you came in there, it was all cinder blocks, big hallway, big rooms, big windows, cameras everywhere. And so I wanted to just change up the space. I couldn't do a peace circle in it, being in these four walls with cinder block. The evening reporting center is, once they are released from juvenile detention for 30 days, they have to report there every evening for 2 hours and do something. And so we were coming in there to do the peace circles with them. But once we beautified the space, we ended up painting a wall. And I think we painted one image of like a boy, and you know, it took on from there. They wanted us to paint the whole space, the whole. I mean, it was over 3,000 square feet that we painted in like 4 months. And we literally would put out a bucket of brushes out there. We didn't want them to feel like they were forced to paint. but we welcomed it. And so they would come out of their whatever class it was and pick up a brush and start painting. And so we started painting them on the face, onto the wall. So their images are on there. Some of the teachers that were there and the mentors that were there. So it made a big difference. And, you know, the governor came out because it was a big deal that we beautified this space for, you know, these youth that are coming back home and trying to get back into the groove of things. Just going to the different schools, all of the schools that we go to, most of their art programs have been cut. Music programs have been cut is the first thing that they cut. And so just imagine being there for 6 hours and being told what to do. And then you have nothing when you go home. And so we try to create these opportunities for them to find their voice, for them to heal, for them to express themselves. You know, there's no right or wrong way to do art here. It's just whatever it comes to mind, whatever it is that you're expressing, whatever it is that you want to let your emotion out. And, you know, you hear these stories. We do a check-in and we do a check-up at every end of the session. And one thing I like to do is I like to have them tell me why they painted that or the colors that they used and why they used it. And it's addicting because once one young person starts letting it out, they all just start letting it out. And, you know, the healing happens there. And I can't even explain the magic that goes down, but you see the changes in them. You see them being risk takers and you see them being able to problem solve better. You see them making their own decisions and it's all doing it through art. And again, it's the hook because once they're here doing the art, they have all these other resources that they can tap into. Like Benji said that, you know, there's all this post-secondary education. There's the health and wellness because we're not only just working with the young person now, we're working with the family as well. So it starts somewhere and we can only do so much here and somebody has to maintain that. And so that's what we do here.
That's a beautiful story, Rick. And just that's a reminder of, you know, what happens when we get to know someone as a whole. Like we just looked at, you know, this particular gang member and say, hey, I can tell that you mess with the arts. Let's work on this public art thing and then, you know, leave it there. Yeah, that may do a little bit of work. But you understand, hey, like we use this opportunity to get to know this person. Let's tap into what they're into and understand them as a whole and see where else we can plug them into this beautiful movement that Build.
One of the success stories is this kid named Scooby that's been here. He came court mandated here at 14 years old and he's 22 now. He's never left. He's here full time. He became my right hand man, you know, my assistant. And now he's able to do, you know, what I do. And you know, it's proof that it works. It's proof.
Fellas, this has been fantastic. I got a final question for you. You all have this great quote on the website. It goes, we believe every young person in every neighborhood deserves every chance to build a bright future. Say we have, you know, some nonprofit leaders listening to this podcast, or we have some elected officials, say it's a mayor or a council person listening to this episode. They've identified some high-risk neighborhoods in their city, but are struggling to really think about the best ways to intervene in these neighborhoods. From the work that you all are doing at Build, what is the main takeaway that you want these stakeholders to get from this podcast to understand, hey, like we don't need to be throwing millions at a single mega project. We don't need to be throwing millions at miscellaneous institutions. We just need to work with the folk already in our neighborhoods. What do you all hope that these stakeholders get from this podcast?
Sure. And I have one more short story or like point after this. I think what I would like people to take away is how the most important thing is just opportunity. You know, a lot of the times, like people are so quick to criminalize children for joining gangs. And this is something I didn't really understand the nuances of because I grew up, you know, in the suburbs. And so it's like this was, you know, a bit alien to me. When you have very little opportunity for, you know, economic advancement in your life or it's a way to make some money, you know, a lot of employers and stuff like that move out of these neighborhoods. And so there's not a ton of places to get a job. Other than that, to even get yourself to that job, if you, you know, get one. And so you're on your block and you see this dude, you know, or some guys who got the nice clothes, you know, they got the nice cars, they got the pretty girls, they got the cool music and music videos. It's like, who are you going to aspire to be? You know, like when Scooby came on, I was first talking to him, he's like, you know what, man, like, I was like, why'd you join a gang? He's like, man, I was tired of being poor. And so what we do a lot of Build, especially as of late, it was, you know, I always wanted to be this case for a long time, but we're so lucky to have gotten to the point where we're able to employ young people now and have them learn lots of different jobs and tasks to help the mission of the agency while getting compensated for it as well. And so we hope that not only is that our, like, a resume builder and a team building practice and a leadership practice, but they're actually getting resources to go about and just live their life and not have to worry all the time and like not have to, you know, resort to some of these dangerous practices that oftentimes is that sort of thing. And it's the money and it's the sense of belonging thing. And we also give them that too. It's like humans are tribal. You want to find that sense of family. You want to feel important. You can either get it there in a super high risk environment, or you can get it here, you know? And so it's just investing in places that do that on the ground work, proven track records for success, that people are in it for the right reasons, and just investing in those things. I do have faith in government, but I have a lot more faith, I think, in just like earnest nonprofit organizations. So that's what I would say. And I would just also like to add, as far as when you first hit us up about this, and I was like, oh, it's a little thing. It's like little things that you can do to help your community and stuff like that. I was thinking about like how, like what would I also say as far as like a thing that you can actually do, you know? I mean, like action. For one, of course, like please support Build Chicago for all those that are listening. You know, we got pretty good content, you know, coming out on the social media.
Yeah,
that's at Build Chicago, BUILD Chicago.
We'll put that in the show notes
for sure. Yeah. Cool. And make a donation if you can. Of course, you know, your work, your help, your support really makes an impact on these young lives, and so that is always appreciated. And I also wanted to say, so as far as it's the little things, the way that I got involved with this organization was like my pop was involved. He was on the board of directors, but I didn't really know anything about it. I was a young kid. I was just like, where's this guy always going all the time? Why is he not home for dinner? What's a board? As I got older, I kind of learned a little bit more about it. I went to some of the dinners and stuff. And then unfortunately, when I was a teenager, my dad passed away suddenly. And so I had been doing these like basement shows, like just like little sort of like friends who are in bands and stuff get together and just like play music and do their art, build sort of a community, you know, uncensored safe space to, you know, create and express yourself. And we're like, damn, like, what if we just use these shows as fundraisers for this thing that my pop was so, you know, passionate about in kind of like an honor of him, in honor of his legacy. And then so I started doing these shows for years, and it just kind of began with like a bunch of kids, you know, doing something together for good, having fun and like raising money for it. And we raised thousands of dollars over a handful of years. And it's like, that's not a hard thing to do. And like, what's crazy is by the end of it, 1 year we raised, you know, a little shy of $2,000, but that went to Build then, that went to Rick. And they use that to put on a different fundraiser that raised almost $20,000. Yeah. So what I would say as far as like it's the little things is the importance, the value, the accessibility and impact of third-party fundraising. Yeah. So it's like if you have a nonprofit that's close to you, that you believe and trust in their work, there's so many different types of events that you can do to really make a deep impact on their work. Whether that's a sip and paint night with your friends, you know, $10 buy-in, you all get together and paint some stuff and drink some wine, or like, you know, do a show, do a, you know, improv night, like whatever it is, it's fun. Yeah. And what's cool is it builds community, because even if you don't know everyone that's there, you're all there for a similar purpose of doing good and helping something and being a part of something really positive. And so that's the message that I would say is for that. That is something that really anyone can do. And you could really you have fun and you really can make a difference with that. So that's what I would, that's what I'd like, my two cents.
Love it. Well, Benji and Rick, thank y'all so much. This has been a joy. Love getting to know more about Build, share it with our listeners. Y'all are doing some really fantastic work in Chicago. And I know it's going to inspire many of our own listeners when they look at at-risk neighborhoods in their own communities, hopefully rethink, you know, how can we actually work with the communities that we want to serve as opposed to just relying on top-down programs. This has been fantastic. Fellas, if anyone wants to connect with you, learn more about all the dope work going down at Build, where can people connect with y'all online?
Make sure to check out www.buildchicago.org. Also follow us on Instagram at Build Chicago, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that good stuff. And we also have our own podcast called Build Radio. You can find that on Spotify, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, you know, wherever you get your podcasts. We drop like an hour episode about it once a month, but they're really great content. I do say so myself. Yeah. But yeah, and donate if you can, of course.
For sure.
Spread the love, pay it forward. Jacob, thank you so much for having us, man.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Thank y'all. This has been a joy. We'll get this up next week and we'll chat real soon.
Definitely. Keep doing your good work too, man.
See you.
Thanks, fellas. Enjoy the day.
Peace.
All right. Have a good one.